Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news for 30 years in two languages all over the world, and right here in the United States. I've interviewed four presidents, worked at four of the U.S.'s major television networks. I believe news should be honest, direct, and impactful, and this is Direct Impact. So I want to share a number with you, a number that is having a devastating effect on Mexico and much of Latin America. You see, we hear a lot about cartels and the gun violence perpetrated in countries like Honduras. And, you know, the media here in America seem to almost look like they're enjoying when they portray everything that's south of Texas as out of control and dangerous and violent, if not downright apocalyptic.
An apology note allegedly turned in by cartel leadership.
When we arrived here in Juarez last night, we were told that 12 people had been killed in the previous 2 days. Nobody is safe in this city.
So what you just saw there is the image that you get that's imprinted in your mind when you turn on the news, right? So, fine. Now let's talk about what you don't get. What you don't get is any kind of honest explanation or focus on what might possibly be causing all of that violence that they're showing you. So where's it coming from, right? Does the violence and do the guns just appear out of thin air? Obviously, the violence can't happen without weapons. So where do those weapons come from? And why are there so many of them? The answers are actually pretty simple. They come from the U.S. And there are so many because it's making the people who manufacture the guns lots and lots of money. That's why there's so many. Money! I mean, we're talking guns and assault rifles, and we're talking high-capacity ammunition. People are making this and selling this stuff. Even in some cases, sophisticated military-style weaponry that are going directly from our country, the United States of America, to the rest of the Americas. In Mexico alone, it's estimated that the vast majority, as much as 80% of the guns used by cartels and accused criminals originate in the United States. Think about that. Some estimates, by the way, are even higher. That means that our country, and more specifically, our country's gun makers, manufacture, market, and export most of the guns that are used in Latin America to fuel and protect the extremely violent drug-running operations. Oh, and by the way, who do you think then buys and consumes those drugs that come from there? We do. We do. We Americans consume the vast majority of illicit drugs grown or manufactured in different parts of the world. In fact, according to the World Health Organization, when it comes to cocaine alone, just coke, right? Cocaine, Americans are more apt to consume it than citizens of any other country on the planet. Think about that. So again, here's the equation. We provide the guns that fuel the business of illicit drugs, and then to boot, we consume the drugs that illicit business creates. So what is being done about this, right? Well, something. As we speak, security forces across at least 15 Latin American countries, including Mexico and Brazil and Colombia, are creating initiatives to try and seize firearms. But because guns from the United States are flooding into their region at such a rapid pace, it's almost impossible to stop this river of metal. You know, that's actually what it's called? It's called, and you look at the articles, it's called the River of Metal. The River of Metal. You see, when guns are seized, more guns are needed. And don't think for 1 minute that that doesn't put a smile on the faces of the gun makers who manufacture then more guns. Oh, they took the guns off the streets of Mexico. Good, let's send more guns, right? That's what, I guess, if you made widgets, you'd be happy you could make more widgets. If you make guns, you're happy you could make more guns. Some countries, like Jamaica, the Bahamas, St. Lucia, Barbados, Trinidad and Tobago, they have agreed to introduce bans on assault-style weapons. But because they're so close to the United States, it's still not known if they're going to be able to keep replacement guns out. Adding to the problem is this. Because gun laws in the United States are so liberal, it's hard to control what's going out because of all the travel between the United States and the Caribbean. So guns are going back and forth because people are going back and forth, and we're very close to the islands in the Caribbean. Mexico and Central America as well. The methods for sneaking guns into those countries are also plentiful. First, there are corporate deals between gun makers and those who front for the cartels and other bad actors. And then there's the straw buyers with legal IDs who are actually buying for somebody else but pretending to be buying for themselves. There's also just plain theft. Oh, and did I mention corruption? Police and military officials, many of them working directly through their U.S. contacts, buy and sell their supposedly commissioned weapons. And then there's the newest way of exporting guns south of the border. They're called ghost guns. Have you heard of this? Ghost guns. That's where only parts of the guns are shipped overseas, and then they're assembled when they get to their destination. And we are joined by Alejandro Colorio. He is a legal advisor of Mexico's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And Alejandro, thanks so much for joining us.
It was wonderful to be here. Hello, Rick.
Good. Listen, I read your editorial that you posted in the Washington Post. Fascinating. You basically say the headline is Mexico is tired of U.S. guns bloodying the streets. But you take it a step further. You are suing the U.S. gun manufacturers. Explain to us what you hope to do with this.
So the reality is that, I mean, everybody thinks that Mexico is very violent and is very dangerous. But the fact is that whereas in the United States, there's tens of thousands of places to buy weapons, in Mexico, there's only one store managed by the army. And it's very difficult to get a carry permission and to own a gun. And once you get
then why are guns everywhere?
Right. And they come in around, I think it's on average, 70% of the weapons are traced back to the United States. 70%. Yeah. And this is information from the U.S. government. So what is that we want to do is, together with all our diplomatic efforts with the United States, we want the gun industry to be more responsible, be more careful. They know or should know where their weapons end. I mean, the narcos and the drug cartels, they show their weapons in social media.
Yeah.
The gun industry should do something because they know through the traceability information, they should do something to sanction the bad actors in their line of distribution. I mean, any other industry would recall their product if the product is going to cause harm. Why not the
gun industry? Of course. Yeah. They're basically allowed to almost run amok, unlike any other expectation we would put on any other company. Would you explain to us so we can better understand what is the process? So the gun manufacturers here, look, I know they're incentivized by money. They want to sell as many guns as possible, and they don't really care where they go. If it wasn't Mexico, it'd be in some other country or anywhere else for that matter. But what is the process by which the guns are made here and end up in the hands of the cartels and the bad guys and everybody else in Mexico? How does that happen?
So there's two actions, specific actions that illustrate what is wrong with the industry in the U.S. One is that they just sell the weapons to anybody, either somebody that wants to kill children in a kindergarten or a drug cartel in Mexico or in Central America to a gang in Haiti or in Jamaica. They just let anybody buy the weapons. And they say it's a matter of the regulations and Second Amendment in the U.S., but as corporations, they should be more diligent, more careful, and auto-discipline themselves and say, you know what, I'm going to ask, for example, a limited liability insurance. If you buy a weapon, you're responsible for that weapon until you sell it, is destroyed, or is it stolen?
But what you're asking for is, first of all, what you're asking for is common sense. And I'm not sure there's a lot of that in my country right now. The second thing that you're doing is you're trying to apply principles to make them apply to your country when those principles don't really apply in our country. And here's what I'm trying to say. We are always complaining about all the violence and all the immigrants that are coming from Mexico. Oh, my God, those people are out of control. We're the ones who buy the drugs from Mexico. We're the ones who give the guns to the people who make the guns and manufacture and run the drugs in Mexico. And by the way, we are as violent or more than Mexico is. So you can't clean your neighbor's house until you clean your house.
That's
how do we expect Mexico to get fixed vis-a-vis our laws and our gun situation until we fix our situation? Have you thought about that?
No, it is completely true. And what we want to do with these lawsuits, any other corporation, when they're sued, they interiorize their actions and say, you know what, I'm going to make some changes because I'm facing this lawsuit. But the fact is that the gun industry enjoys certain immunities from civil liability. So even if you sue them, they just don't make any changes. So what we're doing, and we believe we will prevail at the end, is, you know what, something in specific. You're selling to straw purchasers. You're selling to people that are not the final user. And you know that because all the traceability information, when I say traceability, this is a serial number of the weapon, is traced back to the place of purchase, the selling, and the place of manufacturing. The authorities in the U.S. know who's buying these weapons. The authorities in the U.S. know who is selling these weapons, and the industry should make the necessary changes to stop this from happening. Can you believe, Rick, that in the United States until last summer, the illicit trafficking of weapons wasn't a crime? It was not a crime in federal law in the U.S. Now,
meanwhile, with any, and I've said this, with any other company, if I manufacture children's bicycles and I sell you a bicycle for your daughter, and the bicycle is a piece of junk, and it wasn't manufactured well, none of the screws were tightened, and as soon as she gets on it, it goes out of control and she hits into a wall and, I don't know, heaven forbid, gets seriously hurt. You sue that company, you are guaranteed to win. You're gonna win the case. Same thing happens with a person who sells a gun. There is absolutely, absolutely no accountability. It's like, no, it's impossible to hold somebody who makes a gun or sells a gun accountable, while with every other product, they're accountable. It's so bizarre.
And moreover, because weapons are designed to kill, harm, and destroy. I mean, they're expected to have a higher degree of care. I mean, This is a risk industry, and they should do everything in their hands to prevent that their weapons end in the wrong hands. Because the companies that we're suing will say, well, it's not my fault that criminals buy the weapons and then 100 people get involved in the chain and it finally kills somebody in Mexico. Of course, you're part of the solution.
Alejandro, you are, doing the right thing. I mean, on behalf of all the people, all the victims, all the children, the horrible situation from a security standpoint in your country, I think you're advocating correctly for the rights of the people of Mexico. Good for you. Alejandro is the legal advisor of Mexico's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Check out his WAPO, his Washington Post editorial. It's called Mexico is Tired of U.S. Guns Bloodying Our Streets, and That's Why We're Suing. And we thank him for taking time to join us today. Thank you, Alejandro.
Thank you, Rick.
When we come back, more on arms trafficking. It's a dilemma that's plaguing the U.S. and Mexico, and we're going to drill down on it some more. Stay right there.
Of the rest and decline of the West is an irreversible phenomenon. Now, what we should do is, whether East or West, north or south, we must propound global solidarity and global cooperation of the highest order, of the kind that the world has never seen. So east, west, north, south, we are one family, one global family.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. So, as I told you a little while ago, there is actually a new legislation in the United States that tries to close some of those loopholes that have helped arms trafficking proliferate. It's called the Safer Communities Act, passed by Congress because of all the mass shootings that we see here in the United States. And generally speaking, if you'll allow me, we don't see in other countries. But in these provisions that were for this, there are also provisions to crack down on those ghost guns that I told you a little while ago, and other types of dispersals. The question is, can it really help to reduce the number of illegal weapons that are flowing south into places like Mexico and the rest of Latin America and the Caribbean? And joining me now this episode is Enrique Rivera. He is a writer, producer, historian with a PhD in Latin American history. So Enrique is the perfect person for us to be talking about this. You know, I just have to ask, do you get a feeling that parts of Latin America as a bloody, violent place where it seems nobody wants to live anymore, which is why they're all coming to the United States and parts beyond? Is it that way because we Americans, our beloved country, makes it so? Makes it that way?
I mean, yeah, I guess is the short answer. I mean, this is a lot of that blood comes from the result of civil wars, you know, that have been fueled by Washington. So if we look at El Salvador, for example, where, you know, about a third of their population resides in the United States, that civil war was fueled by $1 million a day being sent by the Reagan administration, right? A popular uprising against a repressive dictatorship.
But hold on a minute. I get that. And I think we all know that. And it's an ugly story, a story we know all too well. But now in these modern times, the story has shifted. And what we seem to be fueling now, according to what I'm seeing, is we're actually fueling the cartels. The cartels, 80% of the weapons used by the cartels in Mexico alone come from here. And many of the corporations that make those weapons are right there along the coast of Texas and on the border with Mexico. So we are providing the weapons they use to run their business.
Yeah,
right?
it's like a funnel. It's like a chute coming straight out of whatever arms manufacturer, and then phew, down into Tijuana and throughout Mexico. And yes, I mean, it's incredible. You said 80%. The Mexican government says it's 90%. That 90% of the cartel's guns are coming from U.S. arms manufacturers. And so when the United States complains, you know, about the violence in Mexico and how it's fueling migration to the United States and how the fentanyl epidemic through Mexico is even warranting a U.S. invasion of that country. I mean, we've got to start looking at, well, what about these weapons?
Do you think it's just a coincidence or maybe something that happens naturally? If the United States, for example, has crappy laws when it comes to guns. We basically are extremely liberal when it comes to guns. Everybody can have them. You can even go to a gun show and buy one without having to register, show a license, anything. It's amazing. So if we're going to have rules that liberal here, doesn't it then follow that our neighbors will end up getting the things that will end up with the consequences of our laws and our actions as well?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense, you know? I mean, Yes, as you say, you know, these gun laws are extremely liberal. I mean, you can get an AR-15, you know, at a gun show. You know, you get a 17-year-old with a fake ID can buy one, you know, take it down to Mexico and sell it for twice the price, you know.
So the reason I'm asking you this question is this. Are the gun manufacturers targeting Latin America and saying, hey, great market, let's just go sell a bunch of crap over there? Or is it just like, well, since it's so easy to sell them and buy them here, what's the difference? You know, we can cross the border and sell it to my friend Pedro in Mexico, and then he'll sell it to the other folks, and he'll get it to the cops and the bad guys and the cartel. I mean, is it a targeted effort or just a consequence, a natural consequences of extremely liberal gun laws?
Well, I think it's both, you know. I mean, it is a consequence of the liberal gun laws, but at the same time, these are smart people who have a lot of money invested and a lot of money at stake, and they're going to look at their bottom line and say, look, we are getting, you know, a whole lot of, they have to know, it's not a secret that a lot of their guns are being trafficked south of the border, right? It can't be a secret. And so that's the reality. And especially since some of these countries, Mexico has one of the strictest gun laws in the hemisphere. No, it's virtually impossible to buy a gun. So
if you're just an average citizen in Mexico.
Yeah,
if you're an average citizen in Mexico, it's impossible to buy a gun, right?
Yeah, there's like one gun depot. It's owned by the government. You have to go through months and months of background checks. And then, you know, to be able to get one. And so, of course, all of their guns are going to come from, you know, 100 miles north where they're being made and given out like candy.
Well, but yeah, but hold on. Listen to what you just said, and let's try and get people who are listening to this conversation to understand how it happens then. Because you just told us it's impossible if you live in Mexico to buy a gun. It's just literally almost impossible. And yet the cartels get huge shipments of all kinds of guns, even military brand weaponry, whenever the hell they want it. How does that happen?
Well, they're getting it from the U.S. I mean, I'm saying 90% of the guns are coming from the U.S. You know, so
we source them in there through. I mean, I've seen the studies. We source them in through contacts. We make contacts. We actually even make contacts with government officials who then buy them, thinking they're for the military or for the police, and they funnel them to their friends who run the cartels. Right.
Yeah, that's definitely one way to do it. I think that the major way that it's being done, though, is by just arms traffickers. Just, I mean, you know, people in the U.S. know that, you know, they can buy guns pretty liberally and that they can take them over the border pretty easily as well. Look, the check coming into the United States from Mexico is pretty hardcore, but going in there isn't nearly so much. And so they've even locked up people driving from Cleveland, you know, buying guns in Cleveland and driving all the way down to Mexico. So it's not even just the Southwest. You know, this is a country of 400 million people.
And to be sure, the people who are doing this, you know, we like to blame, you know, the immigrants, you know, that poor lady who barely has two nickels to rub together comes to America because she's hungry as hell. She lives in Honduras and a place like Tegucigalpa or other places that are just as dangerous. And her daughter will be raped, her son will be killed, or he'll have to join the cartel, and they decide, you know, the hell with it. We're leaving this country, and we're going to go norte, right? But we have created the consequences that that woman, the environment, that bloody, dangerous environment she's living in, we kind of created that or helped to create it because, A, we provide the cartels the guns and the weapons to be dangerous and do their thing, and then, B, we buy the drugs. Americans, people in Honduras aren't smoking pot. We are. They're not doing coke. We are. Americans are the number one consumers in the world of the drugs that these people. So.
Right. And it's the U.S. is decaying social fabric, right? I mean, how much money is being invested in combating addiction? You know, combating the social problems that lead to addiction. I live in Los Angeles. Half of this city lives in the street, and half of those are hooked on fentanyl, you know? And so it's really, really tragic. And so why do people use drugs? Well, because, you know, their life is shitty. They can't get a job. They're depressed. Sorry, I cursed. And And so they pick up the drugs and then they become addicted. And so what is our government, what is our society doing to rid us of this pest? No, not much. And so so yes, we are fueling. It's a complex problem, and the United States is guilty of fueling it. Blaming the immigrant or blaming, you know, people south of the border is easy, and it's just it's ineffective.
You know, Enrique, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking time to take us through this most interesting situation, which is costing a lot of lives in Latin America and certainly not improving our prestige around the world either. Thanks once again.
Thanks, Rick.
Hey, before I go, I want to remind you of what we do here, right? Our mission, and it's pretty simple. We're trying to de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes that we all live in. Truth is, the truth does not live in boxes. The truth is everywhere, and we're looking for it. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact, by golly.